welcome to Hat Trick. I'm Jordan Dowler Coltman. I'm joined, as always, by Elliot Tanti and Braden Dowler Coltman. We've got some very special guests joining us, too, for Topic One. Really quick before we get there, Elliot and Braden, you guys are ground zero in Edmonton. What's the vibe? Because I can tell you what the vibe is here in Vancouver. It's probably very different, but what's the vibe in Edmonton?
I would describe it as overly confident. There is, frankly, no way that the Oilers are not going to win this series in four games if you asked any fans right here in Edmonton right now. That would be my best
interview. All right. Well, we're going to talk about that and a whole bunch more. Let's get to it. Here's topic one. Okay, you could kind of probably hear the chuckling in the background. We have two very special guests with us. The hosts of the Mother Pucker podcast have graciously joined us. Reese and Riz are with us. They have their own episode, brand new episode, previewing round two out right now. So you can go check that out anywhere you get your podcasts. Welcome, ladies. How are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for having us.
Overly confident, apparently. Because I just left Edmonton.
We're gonna talk Oilers here. That's why we've got them here. And I'm hopefully you haven't, you know, burned all your hot takes. You can save a couple for us.
Riz knows. Always put on a tinfoil hat for a hot take.
Mm-hmm. She had it on today. That's for sure.
All right. Well, that's a good tease for your show. So obviously, people want to check that out. Let's go through this really quick. Here's the game I'm gonna play. I want you to give me one player you think is going to be a difference maker for the Oilers. We'll see how many people pick the same player, but here's the one rule. It cannot be McDavid or Draisaitl because those are the obvious picks. I need you to go down that roster, depth or something off the board. Who do you look to as being the difference maker here as the Oilers take on the Canucks? We'll start with you, Riz.
Okay, well, obviously it can't be the top two, and I'm going to take even our, apparently according to the best player in the world, Zach Hyman, out of that mix too. So I'm going to go to Matthias Ekholm, because the Oilers defense was phenomenal in round one. They had an unbelievable penalty kill, special teams, but even just the way that they played really low, they didn't give a lot of like really high quality scoring chances, and I think Ekholm is just a kind of a force back there that just holds that line. He's the wall that no one's getting by, and I think he's our difference maker.
Reese?
I'm gonna say Evan Bouchard. He's got that snipe, some power. He always looks like he's about to cry. I feel like that's like brings some emotion to the game. And you just, you know, it's with Ekholm taking care of some of the actual defensive side of defense. I want to see 90 mile an hour slappies all the time.
All right, Braden.
I have to go with Skinner. I mean, the Canucks are kind of depleted when it comes to goaltending, and if Skinner can be top notch, I think that that's the difference maker in this series.
Elliot?
I'm going to go way off the board here, and I'm going to say a name that had an excellent last two games of the series. They were the only two that he played in, and Derek Ryan. And I think he demonstrated that there's a need for that type of a player. And we know as things get tighter and it's going to get harder, this is going to be a hard fought series. And you're going to need someone like Derek Ryan making plays like he did at the end of game five against LA.
All right. Those are all good picks, but I'm going to tell you why you're all wrong. And the difference maker is going to be
Chris
a guy who I don't think actually had a very good round one. But I don't think for lack of effort. I think it was just, he just didn't, the way he played actually didn't need to show up, because the LA Kings kind of rolled over in a few of those games, certainly the ones where they were badly outscored. But I think in a series against a team that has some, let's just call them younger defenders in comparison to Drew Doughty, I think Corey Perry could be a really key piece of this. We haven't seen playoff Perry yet. And I think this is the series that could get a bit chippy and can get a little bit snipey. I watched a lot of the Canucks against the Predators, and they are a bit more of an aggressive forechecking team. And they're the kind of team that when you've got, you know, those skirmishes in front of the net, they stand up for themselves. That's where Corey comes to shine. And I think, you know, they have, as Braden mentioned, some interesting challenges in net. So I think they're going to be pretty aggressive in defending their crease. And Corey Perry is definitely going to want to get in there. And especially if Shelob is in there as the rookie goaltender, he's going to want to get, you know, literally get his ass in his face and make it uncomfortable for him. And he's going to get pushed around. And I think Corey Perry could be a difference maker. He didn't get on the board in round one, but he's due for one there. All right. So let's go
one
more time.
Strategy there is ass in face.
That's his strategy. That's right. But mind you, that's what how Hyman scored most of his goals this year too. It's the Ryan Smith effect. Yeah. Let's go around the horn one more time here. This time I need you to tell me how many games it takes for the Edmonton Oilers to beat the Canucks, or if for some God only knows what reason you don't believe the Oilers are making it out of round two, this is your one and only chance to admit that publicly. Let's go backwards. So I will go first. I will say that I believe the Oilers are winning this series in, I'm going to say six. I wanted to say five, but I said five with LA and I was right. So I just feel like it's got to be six here. I think the Canucks steal one or two. It really comes down to goaltending for them, but I'll say six for the Oilers. Elliot.
Well, I think it's clearly going to be in four games. I like everyone else in Edmonton think this is a clean sweep.
Wouldn't that be awesome? All right, Braden. Braden is shaking his head.
I literally live right across the street from Elliot. I can see him right now shaking his head. I am not overly confident. Something about this Vancouver team, like, yes, they've had our number all year. I know we played them really early in the season and that, you know, the team sort of turned everything around, but there's something about this team that scares me a little bit. So I do still think the Oilers will come away with this one, but I think it'll be six.
All right. Larice.
You know, I am nervous about these Canucks for some strange reason, like Braden said, but I have like a weird sense of peace and confidence, and so I'm going to say Oilers in five.
All right, Riz, take it home.
The reason why you guys are worried about this Canucks team isn't anything to do with the team, and it's because of Rick Tocchet. It's because of Rick Tocchet. He took this team of like what is essentially the same team as last year, which was still garbage, and like completely flipped them on their head and put them in a blender, and all of a sudden they decided they like to win. Except for Petey, but I'm gonna give him the benefit of doubt. I think that Stelas is better than we think he is. I think it's gonna take six games, or version six.
When do we have Demko back? Now that they push game to Wednesday.
Yeah, that's the other thing we didn't mention on this show.
Why is it Wednesday? Why can't they fucking play tomorrow?
Right? You want the hot takes on that one? I guarantee you need to listen to the Mother Pucker podcast because I know they're not right, in it on that one.
Great. That makes no sense.
Ridiculous scheduling. Yeah. Originally, I know that the factor around the Tuesday piece was that Pearl Jam was in town, and that's why Game 7, when scheduled originally for Sunday in that first round series, would have been an absolute nightmare here because Pearl Jam was supposed to play Saturday and Monday, I believe. But obviously leaving their show built in the arena because they're starting their tour. They would have had to literally tear it down, put ice, like pull the ice cover, play a hockey game, and then reinstall the concert. It would have been a shit show. So, but now Wednesday's there. I don't know what the NHL is trying to do. Anyway, those are all of our hot takes. It's all there for you. As I said, please go check out the Mother Pucker podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. These two do a great job. They've got lots of hot and spicy takes for you, and they'll be watching alongside all of you overconfident Oiler fans in Edmonton. Hey, the Canuck fans here are pretty confident too. They were in the streets chanting, fuck McDavid. 10 minutes after the last
round. That doesn't
sound
like a confident group if you
ask
me.
That's going to get them.
I mentioned it to a friend who's a Maple Leafs fan. Obviously, you know, once again, struggling and suffering after another difficult loss, but he's kind of come to terms with it. He just accepts his team's never going to really give him anything. So he watches knowing that it's always going to come out.
It's a hate watch.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. But he was laughing.
Difficult
goes,
isn't even the adjective.
I can tell you how well that goes because the Maple Leafs chanted, "We won Florida last year before round two." And how did that go? Thank you, Riz. Thank you, Reese. We appreciate it as always. And again, the Mother Pucker podcast, wherever you get your podcast. That was topic one.
Hey, podcast listeners. My name is Larice Campbell, and along with my co-host, former Olympic bobsledder, Alicia Olson, I am so excited to introduce you to the Mother Pucker podcast. Our brand new show launches this Wednesday, October 18th. And if you love the Oilers like we do, you are going to love our show. It's just two gals who aren't afraid to drop the gloves and throw some hot takes about the boys in blue and orange. Whether you're a massive hockey fan like us or just looking for some new voices talking about the Oilers' blue line, or lack thereof, we promise the show is for you. So subscribe now and tell your friends. It's time for the Mother Pucker podcast.
Okay, so topic two here. We're just going to really quickly run around the other storylines around the playoffs. We haven't been on for a couple weeks, so obviously missed most of round one, which is fine. But now we know who the really good teams are. They're still around. But let's just talk through some of those series because there was some good drama. You know, round one in the NHL playoffs, in my opinion, is probably the best round one of any sports playoffs, right? You get hockey every night. There's series that actually have storylines and stakes, and both teams are there. You know, often, especially in like football and stuff, you have that first round and it's a one and done kind of thing. And it can be one team just has a bad day and it's over, right? Whereas here, you have a bad day, you could bounce back the next game and, you know, shut them out. And we've seen that. And then you also get these year over year things. And Lloris was frustrated, let's say, going into this playoffs. She was one of those many people who started to complain about the whole division structure and the wild card structure, and we need to reformat. We need to go back to the 8-team playoff structure and all those things. The only thing I'll say in defense of the division thing is you do end up with these year over year storylines, and there's value to that from strictly an entertainment perspective. So let's start there because we've already kind of teased it. Braden, thoughts on, once again, the Maple Leafs and their nemesis in Boston in round one. And again, it felt so much like the Maple Leafs were going to flip the script on them. They were up 3-1. You know, they had an opportunity. Pardon me, they were down 3-1. They had an opportunity to flip it around. Unlike, you know, several years ago, as we all know, where they collapsed after being up 3-1. So it just didn't, they just couldn't get it done in game seven, but it really felt like they were going to, didn't it?
No. I mean, every year you think that team, that core four, is going to make the jump into the second, at least into the second round. And yet, you know, they keep finding themselves facing against this nemesis, which is the Bruins. I mean, I feel for them. I wasn't excited to see Toronto move on to the next round, but I feel bad for that fan base. That's a really, really hard thing to continue to come up against. I mean, and it's not just a loss. Like, it's not just, you know, game four, game five, game six, they're out. It's consistently game seven overtime against the Boston Bruins. Like, that must just sting.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, Elliot, is it same old song and dance, or should we be now expecting some real changes in Toronto? Like, how many more years of this same pattern do they tolerate as an organization? I mean, we've already seen a GM change last year, but like, is this it for Shanahan? And if not, like, how does he justify sticking around? He's been there almost a decade now and they've never made it past round two.
Yeah, I've been sort of trying to stay away from media this weekend because I knew it was going to be very self-absorbed around what the situation in Toronto. But I think this is an active question, right? I mean, obviously the GM change, it's not like coaching where you make a shift and then like the next year the team's completely different and can win. Like, I think you want to probably leave some space for that too. But I think what we're seeing here is that this core group of players is not good enough. They've got a lot of salary tied up in some really big contracts in the top end of their forward group. And I think it's having a significant impact on their capacity to field depth-worthy teams, and depth wins games in the playoffs. And I think that that's what we're seeing here. I mean, is it a bit of bad luck too? Absolutely. Is Montreal, are the Maple Leafs maybe cursed? Maybe. Like, at this point, you'd have to think something's going on there. if you were theory mind. I mean, I think, yeah, like what we've seen here is that something needs to change in Toronto. And I anticipate that, you know, one of the big four in that team on the front end could be out. Like, I think that
coaching is something that can happen for that team. Like, look at the Oilers made it to the second round last year and they got rid of their guy this year just because they were on a slide. And then it turned everything around. Not to suggest it's all in the hands of Knobloch, but
no, but Sheldon Keefe has been there long enough now that you do have to start to wonder how much of a rope he's got. I mean, he's on his second GM already. Usually when a GM comes in, you know, he wants his guy. He wants an opportunity to kind of make it his thing. Tree Living takes over, but maintains the coach. And, you know, that's why for me, it's more like the Shanahan piece is what's interesting, because he's the top of the food chain there, obviously, right? He's the president of hockey ops. His job is to make sure everything below him works. He makes one change at like stage two, but the guy on the ground floor who's actually there with the players every day, making the decisions, making the matchups, doing all that, it's not working. He can't get it done.
Point. I think this is more substantive than just talking about a coaching change. I mean, when the Oilers made the coaching change that you're referencing, Brayden, you know, the team had an awful start to the season. They were 2-7-2, and it was a problem. And that was more of the not getting the results on the ground at that moment. And as soon as they made that change, something shifted. When you're consistently losing in the first round of the playoffs, that speaks to more of a systemic issue with fundamentally how your team is built. And I think that's what we're seeing in Toronto right now. And that's why I agree with Jordan that we have to be looking more substantive to, like, what is the structural issue with this team? They're a great regular season team. No one can deny that, but they can't win in the playoffs. And I think that that speaks to the way the team's built more so than how it's being coached.
All right, well, let's jump to a different team in a different conference and another series that I just think there's interesting things to touch on here. Were you surprised at all by just how ordinary, I guess, Connor Hellebuck looked, Brayden, considering this is a guy who's up for the Vezina, you know, a guy who is arguably considered by many people to be the best goaltender in the league year over year. And yet he looked human, like just absolutely pedestrian.
Yeah. And so, yes, absolutely. I was shocked as many were to see him let in 5+ goals in probably every single game. The thing that surprised me more, though, was his own admission of how much he felt like he was playing at his best level he's ever played in the NHL. Like, how can that be? How can you feel that way? And yet your goals against is, you know, worse than the entire season that you've had. So it was super surprising and a huge disappointment for that team. That team was on a absolute heater going into the playoffs. And I mean, I think I was as shocked as everybody was to see the end result in that series.
All right, let's bounce around a little bit, Elliot. Any other series or any other teams that really stood out for you or really surprised you, I guess?
Really surprised me, I guess, the dominance of the Rangers. I mean, we were kind of joking around about like the sweep, and we just don't see sweeps anymore. There's so much parity in the league, but the Rangers have just been like an outstandingly strong team, and look at them beating the Hurricanes in game one again tonight too. That's a team with a lot of confidence, a lot of rest, and a lot of really good players. And I think maybe not shocked, but a little surprised at the strength at which they came out of the first round.
They didn't really have much competition in that Caps team. Like, that Caps team barely made the wild card.
No, and I think it would be a surprise that they won the series, but just how dominant they were in the series is probably a big surprise for me. I mean, it's still, you know, Alexander Ovechkin and a Washington Capitals team with a lot of, like, former Stanley Cup champions on it. Like, you know, you don't usually get to see that kind of a sweep. And, yeah, maybe Washington was just out of gas. I mean, I think the Stars Golden Knights series was probably the most entertaining series of the round for sure. That would be, and I'm a bit shocked that the Stars did come back and win that series given the start that they had. So I think no one would have been surprised if you'd said that series was going to go 7 games. But if you're going to say one team was going to win 2 straight and then another team was going to lose 3 straight, I think that would have been a bit shocking.
You meant to say given the cap that the Vegas Golden Knights have.
Yeah, also that.
Like, I'm just glad that they're out. However, the fact that they're out now turns all the attention away from that nonsense. And I don't think anything's going to change next year.
I would be surprised if it doesn't get addressed in some way because of just how much attention it's gotten.
Literally,
year now,
game but... one, Mark Stone's back.
Oh, like, yeah. No, what's... We know.
And scores.
Yeah. So, Brayden, I'll pose the same question to you. Looking around the league, what were the other surprises or interesting storylines you saw out of round one?
I mean, Florida-Tampa, I thought was pretty evenly matched. I could have, you know, that to me, that was pretty 50-50. I think this Carolina team is something scary, although they were, you know, like Elliot said, New York is a pretty good team here. That's a series I think will go quite a ways. I'm super curious to see how this Vancouver team can play deeper into the playoffs without the goaltending situation. I'm hoping it doesn't turn out.
Well, okay. So let's just talk about that for a second. Cause here's the thing on this goaltending situation. Like, right now they have the best problem to have, which is that you lose your starting goaltender, but both of the other guys have played well. Right. So does Smith.
No, but their backup, Dismas injured too.
No, he was ill. And now they're claiming it was it's a lower body thing. But the first report was he was ill. So he was good to go. He was on the bench for the last two games. But once Shelovs came in and played as well as he did, I mean, the guy had a shutout in game six. Like, one this goal. Is now the problem, though. Sorry?
Yeah. They won by one goal. Like
that, he still didn't let a goal in. This is an NHL caliber goaltending performance against a desperate team. Like, this is the piece of the puzzle here that I think people are overstating. You know, but here's the thing. Here's where I would push back on that. You're right. He has improved himself in the playoffs in the NHL. But how many times have we seen a rookie goaltender come in with almost like a naivete to the picture of it and just happy to be there and play out of their mind, i.e. Jordan Binnington winning a Stanley Cup for the St. Louis Blues, right? Several years back to, was it Lawton in Philly taking them to the finals? Like, this is not a new storyline. And here's the thing. This is where I actually think Rick Tocchet does have a difficult decision to make game one. Who do you play? Do you go to the NHL experience of DeSmith, knowing that he has played well against the Oilers in the times he played them? Or do you ride the hot hand and reward the rookie who gave you two phenomenal, you know, starts? And even in the game that they lost in game five to force game six, like, he's still, what was it, two goals against? Like, he was very good. And I think that this is also a goalie with pedigree. He won a world championship medal for Latvia, the first ever at the men's world championships 2 years ago. And he's ready to go. He's played really well so far. And that's now, I think, what's going to happen. The big thing for the Oilers against this is you have to get more quality chances on him than the Predators were capable of doing. You know what I mean? The Predators were not an offensive threat team. They were a great defensive challenge for the Canucks, but they'd never really posed a danger. And the big piece, they had no power play. That's what the Oilers' greatest weapon is now against this Canucks team, is the Canucks' penalty kill was subpar in round one. Well, subpar is going to have you buried against the Oilers if you take penalties. And, you know, Larice mentioned earlier in a conversation I was having with her too, like, she was worried about them taking runs at McDavid and like just being a bit more aggressive than we saw in LA. Well, here's the thing, go for it and let's see how the referees sort it out, because put them on the power play and the Oilers will bury them that way. Like,
Vancouver doesn't have the size.
They do on the back end. You have Tyler Myers is going to take the stick to him.
Sure, Zadorov
is going to take the stick to him. They've got some aggression in there.
Up front, who? Dakota Joshua?
Dakota Joshua's, well, and JT Miller throws his body around. They're not huge guys, that's true. But they actually, I would argue, they do match up well line for line with the Oilers, which is why they swept the Oilers in the regular season. But I think the playoffs are a different animal. You know what I mean? Elliot, just as we wrap this topic up, we already said in the first round kind of how we saw this series playing out. But really quickly, if you go through the other series, so New York or Carolina, who do you have?
Oh, New York for sure. I think that team is destined to be the Eastern Conference's representative in the Stanley Cup final this year.
All right. Boston, Florida.
Boston, Florida. I'm going to take Florida. I think Florida is too strong and has been there before. And Boston, you know, they did find a way to beat the Maple Leafs, but look pretty shaky. And there's some questions about coaching there.
This is a big rematch too, right, for Florida and Boston, because Boston's got a chip on their shoulder about last year. But Florida, as you say, also feels like they've got some unfinished business. And if they're healthy, they're the same team that went to the finals last year, barring one or two additions or changes, right? On the other side, you've now got the Dallas Stars and the Colorado Avalanche, a classic 1990s, early 2000s matchup.
I mean, this is going to be really tricky. I had lots of confidence in Dallas going in, but obviously pushing to seven games with Vegas, maybe some of that's shook for me. I don't know. I really like Dallas still. I think I'll take them, but that's going to be a fun series to watch.
And then obviously we already know where you're going with the Oilers and the Canucks. So Braden, I'll turn it to you. Let's go backwards. Avalanche, Dallas, who you got?
I've got the Avalanche. They looked so good offensively against the Jets. That said, though, this has to be another Game 7 matchup. These are two of the best teams in the West. The Central was loaded this year, but the fact that the Dallas Stars took out the Knights and the Avs took out the Jets, it's gonna be a bloodbath. But I've got the Avs in, yeah, 7.
And then we've got Florida and Boston in a rematch.
Man, it's hard to bet against Bob. Bobrovsky's been insane. He always shows up in the playoffs, but I've got to go with the Bruins. I think they're going to take it in 5.
And then obviously the New York Rangers Carolina series.
I'm taking Carolina. I still think that they're the best team in the East. And I think it's going to be a Yeah, I think it's going to be another long one, probably six.
Okay, I'll take New York. I'll take Florida. I will take Colorado and then the Oilers. And I think obviously that the Dallas Colorado series for me is the most interesting one to watch. But I actually think Colorado, like, it's the experience factor for me that makes the difference in that series.
Only two years removed.
That's what I mean. And they looked so dominant against Winnipeg that they just looked locked in. I mean, to be honest with you, that's kind of where my confidence with the Oilers comes from, is just this feels different. They didn't look like a team that was just glad to be out of the first round anymore. Like, they looked all business at the end of it, which was not the case in the last 2 years, where it looked like they were relieved to be out of the first round. Here, they expected to be, and they were. And Colorado feels the same way. I think there might be a little bit of confidence shook there too for Dallas with how hard that was to get past the Knights. We'll see. All right, that's topic two. Hey, if you're a fan of Formula One, then I've got the perfect podcast for you. The Pit Stop Podcast, presented by the Ordinary Podcasting Network. After every single race of the Formula One schedule, Jordan and Tyler will break it down, give you some news, analysis, insight, before answering your questions and setting you up for the next race. That's the Pit Stop Podcast, available everywhere you get your podcasts. All right, topic three this week is our favorite around the sports world topic we like to call...
Tour d'Horizon.
That was good, Brandon. You were queued up and ready to go. I'm impressed. The Tour d'Horizon, which apparently in French means a whole lot of different stories about sports. I'm sure that's what it means. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many listeners we have in Quebec, but... they're all gone now. Basically, the premise here is Elliot and Braden don't know the topics I'm going to throw at them. We're just going to talk about a couple different things going on in and around the sports world. And hopefully it's not too painful. Let's talk NBA playoffs really quick, Braden. So I personally have not watched a single game, but here's what I do know. Are good. The Celtics are good. And OKC is really good. And other than that, that's all I know right now. Tell me what I should know or not know about the NBA playoffs and where the big storylines are currently.
Well, most of the big star players aren't in the playoffs anymore. And I'm talking about LeBron James. I'm talking about Kevin Durant, Devin Booker. I'm talking about James Harden, Paul George, Kawhi. We are in a new era, my friends, of NBA basketball. The Boston Celtics will win the championship this year, led by Jason Tatum. But the likes of OKC, I don't know if you know anything about their situation. They finished in the East first, in the East, led by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Canadian, might I add. They are also SGA. They're also loaded with draft picks after trading away a bunch of different superstars over the years. So Sam Presti for president, because this man is doing crafty, crazy things that GMs have never done before. But then there's also the likes of the Minnesota Timberwolves, led by whom everybody is saying is the next coming of Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant, and that's Anthony Edwards. I'm going to push back a little bit to those people who are saying such stuff like that, only because he hasn't won anything yet. However, watching this guy play basketball, he is so dynamic. He's incredibly athletic, and he has that sort of killer instinct you can see as he plays the game, sort of like Kobe and MJ had. So it's pretty exciting to watch him play basketball, and I think that he's going to drive Minnesota to a pretty deep playoff run this year.
All right, we'll leave that one there for a second then. Elliot, I'll ask you this one. On a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you about the idea that, you know, women's basketball was played in Edmonton? And what do you think the big impact of this kind of outreach from the WNBA has in Canada and just in sports culture in general?
Yeah, I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, like 8, 9, 10, I think it was outstanding. Sounds like it was an outstanding event. I wasn't there, but 16,200 other people were. The stadium was, or the arena was packed, and apparently it was an awesome crowd, awesome event, and people were talking about it all day today, and I think they'll be talking about it all into next week too.
And this is great. It's awesome that Edmonton's been recognized for being a engaged basketball market. I think we've seen that through the Stingers, but also just in general, there's Paul Sir has been, you know, a notable Canadian basketball name, national name, has resided here and really driven a lot of that. And you're starting to see the impact of his presence and his work in the community as well, too. Yeah, really exciting. And it's awesome that we said we were identified. I'd like to see more of this, and I think they're going to do it. I mean, this is how you grow a game, right? You go to new markets, you find new markets, you build fan bases, you get people excited. You know, I know at least two of my staff or people that I work with young daughters, took their daughters to this game. Like, that's what you want to see in this. This is why you do these things. So that's awesome. I think it's great. And it's awesome that Edmonton is recognized as for the basketball fandom that we have here.
Staying on women's sports, the regular season of the PWHL wraps up and they are getting ready for their first ever playoff series, playoffs, I should say, sorry. And it's four teams, obviously, that go in. The two host teams for round one will be Toronto and Montreal. They're locked in. I believe I'm not sure now if the stand, I believe they had games today, so I'm sure the standings are now set. But what I think is really exciting about this is, again, like the women's basketball in Edmonton this week, this is a sport that has gotten so much more attention than it ever has in this country in the last couple months. It was an interesting conversation I had this week with my five-year-old son when they played a clip of the highlight pack from one of the women's game, you know, at the intermission of the Oilers game. And he looked at me and goes, "Wait, women play hockey on TV too?" And I said, "Yeah, they do." And I had to explain to him, you know, that unfortunately we don't have teams out here in the West. We don't really get to watch it in a local market scenario, but it made me excited about the opportunity of thinking how many other kids are seeing that for the first time in whatever market they're in. And hopefully, as it occurred in our household, you know, it elicits the conversation about, you know, the fact that, yes, women and girls can play sports too. You haven't had an opportunity necessarily to see them on TV as much as you have the men, but hopefully that's changing, an opportunity for both young boys and girls to, you know, see that representation, which I think is really, really cool. All right, last one for you. And I don't know whether or not you've caught any of this. This is a free and baseless plug for the other show on the network, but at Braden, you must be thrilled. You must be over the moon today.
I'm thrilled. What are we thrilled about?
Lando Norris wins his first ever Grand Prix in Miami.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know. It kind of breaks my heart. For a while there, you carried his banner, but now you're going to have to dust off the old. Yeah, you'll have to dust off the old.
Like I said, the freaking F1, man. If Max Verstappen can just DNF, then we actually have exciting races. Hey,
he finished in second. He was beat today.
Well, this is what you're telling me. I'm thrilled for Lando. I'm thrilled for that whole McLaren team, that British or the American led British race team. It's a great thing for that team. They've been on the precipice for a little while now, and with a few seasons there, they were sliding. I think that's great. It gets me excited for F1. I'll tell you that much. Do I sound excited?
this race though isn't gonna, like, we're not gonna have to do this any longer, right? Like, this Miami.
Oh no, they're gonna keep this around now for a while. It makes a lot of money.
Fanfare, man. How many celebrities?
That's the thing you watch when you watch it. It is 100% about the market. In fact, here's the only gray cloud over the McLaren win today. They had a certain former president in their paddock before the game, and then had to issue a press release, not apologizing, but sort of clarifying they do not consider themselves to be a political entity, and that when asked, they respect the office of the presidency and therefore chose to allow him to come and visit. So
who was there? Donald was there.
Yeah. So there was an awkward moment when Norris won that Crofty chose to say, "Look, he trumped the field," and everyone sort of groaned. It was a bit awkward, but that's what happens when you go to Miami. Sometimes you end up in the company of some strange politics, as is often the case in Florida.
It just seems like there's more interest in what's going on in the stands than there ever is on the actual racetrack when they're in Miami. And I wonder if that's actually good for F1 in the United States. Maybe it is.
I think they need it. I think they need it. That's their fan base.
I agree. I think that it'll be interesting to see how you know, the how well America can sustain that attention to Formula One. It's sort of plateaued, I would say, right now. It definitely has come down from where it was 2 years ago after everyone and their mother had seen Formula or Drive to Survive. But I do think it's interesting. There's an announcement a couple of weeks ago that there's some network is launching a 24-hour Formula One content channel, basically like a streaming platform in the United States, specifically for an American audience to sort of keep them in the loop. So we'll see how that goes. Anyway, that was our tour d'horizon, except that I missed one key piece of the story when it comes to the PWHL, because I started talking about the kids, which is important. But I missed a key piece that I actually did want to ask you about. Really interesting format for their playoffs. So as I said, Montreal, Toronto, those are the top two teams. They are guaranteed home ice to start the first round. And it's a best of five, I believe. Don't quote me on that. It might be seven, but I think it's five. However, Toronto finishes in first place. And here's the fun format thing that goes back to what we were talking about with divisions. They get to pick their opponent from the bottom two. That's which fun. I love. That's literally so now they're calling them out. So when you got fans in Toronto chanting, "We want Florida," Toronto literally now gets to pick their opponent. And here's the great part about that. It's like a schoolhouse pick where if you're the one they pick, you know, you're going in there with that extra little incentive to beat them because they thought you were the cupcake. So this should be fun. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And I'm not saying the NHL would ever adopt something as potential for teams to be embarrassed by because they protect their teams way too much. But I really love that the PWHL, when you only have four teams, let them set it up in such a way that'll add a little bit of drama to
it. So who actually, is it like a team vote or is the coach vote?
The team gets to make the official decision. So it is a good
question. There's like one player, they're like, no, God, no, let's not go with them.
I would bet that it is a vote for the team. I would assume that they will have let the actual players make some of that determination. It may not be a difficult decision. We don't know, Braden. They may have looked at their schedule and go, we'd like to play.
I want to believe that it is.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that would be really great, but they're not going to.
Disappointed players after
their losses. So they start Wednesday. And again, they'll have to, I don't know if there'll be some type of official announcement or whatever it's going to be. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. Minnesota and Boston are the two bottom teams. Ottawa was eliminated. So,
Toronto didn't want to pick Boston.
Well, that's the question. Does Toronto call out Boston now and they get some revenge for the city, right? And it's like, hey, the guys couldn't get it done. Watch the ladies do it for you, which would be pretty great. Sweet justice there. Yeah, absolutely. All right. That is, that was our tour
d'horizon.
Thank you, Braden. A little slow on that one that time, but I appreciate it all the same. Thank everybody for listening. We appreciate your patronage. If you haven't already, please head over to the Ordinary Podcasting Network's website, which is ordinarypodcasts.com. Thank you to Riz and Reese for joining us in Topic One today. And again, they have the Mother Pucker podcast available everywhere you get your podcasts. There's a new episode setting up round two. You want more in-depth than we give you, then that is where you go for your Oilers coverage. As well, Tyler and I will talk tomorrow recapping the Miami Grand Prix. And you can submit questions. We answer questions on that show. So if you've got any questions, like Braden, you know, how did it go? Because I didn't watch. Or Elliot, will they or will they not race in Miami moving forward? Those would be great questions. You can submit to pitstop@ordinarypodcasts.com. And until next week or whenever we're back, enjoy some hockey. Stay safe out there. Be kind to one another, Canuck fans and Oilers fans. At the end of the day, you know, we're just hockey fans. Keep it civil. And until then, that was Hattrick.
Hattrick is a member of the Ordinary Podcasting Network. It's produced every week by Jordan Dyler-Coltman and Braden Dyler-Coltman. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thanks for listening.
The Ordinary Podcasting Network wishes to acknowledge that the lands on which our conversations take place include Treaty 6 territory, the traditional meeting ground and home for many Indigenous peoples, including the Cree, Dene, Soto, Blackfoot, Métis, and the Nakota Sioux peoples, as well as the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit, whose footsteps have marked these lands for generations. And we extend our appreciation for the opportunity to live, create, and share stories on these territories.
The Ordinary Podcasting Network intends to engage in conversations and dialogue which acknowledge that reconciliation is not a destination, but a journey, and that we remain committed to practicing our craft in a decolonized space.